It's 5 o'clock in the UK. It's midday in Denison University in Ohio. I think I see the pool behind me on virtual background. Welcome to What Comes Next Live. I'm your host, Tom McCallum. I'm passionate about what I call open leadership and write about that daily on tommccallum.com. I'm always inspired by listening to the thoughts of leaders I meet, which led me to create very selfishly this show so I can listen and learn from them. Today's guest is Greg Perini, who yesterday began his 34th season as the head swim coach, I think I've got the title right, at Denison University, well-known in the world swimming community. And I'm particularly intrigued to talk to Greg at this point around what comes next and his thoughts on that. And with that, over to you, Greg. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the conversation.
Well, I'm starting my 61st trip around the sun. I celebrated a birthday just a few weeks ago, and 60 feels pretty good. My 34th year at Denison is, I'm looking forward to that as well. All sorts of interesting possibilities and challenges in front of us. But originally was born and raised in upstate Michigan. One of three children, an older sister, the younger sister, so I suffer from middle child syndrome, always a little insecure about myself and the things that I do, always looking to boost my self-esteem. Did my undergraduate work at Kenyon College, did my graduate work at Michigan State University with some additional grad work at the University of Michigan. Got into the coaching gig almost by accident. My original track coming out of grad school was to head into the ministry. I really was interested in going into pastoral counseling. And so I've always had a passion for working with young people and trying to help them navigate what I perceive to be a challenging world. And as I went through my own discernment process, my priest identified that I'd be a horrible priest and I probably wouldn't fit very well into the church. I was too much of a maverick for them. And that, but he did note that I had a real passion for swimming. And he said, have you ever thought about coaching? And I said, well, I've given it a little bit of a thought. And he goes, well, you know, you can be a good minister. You can wear a stopwatch as opposed to a collar. And so, after some discernment, I chose to go into the coaching and teaching profession, coached overseas just a little bit, as a part of the United States Information Service, over in the Isle of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean. Came back to the United States looking for a job, and I've been familiar with Denison just simply because of my ties in college, and saw it as an opportunity to get a foothold in the small college ranks. And as I was sharing with you earlier, I came in with a 4-year plan at Denison, and 34 years later, I'm still working on it. And it's been a good gig. I think one of the things I really enjoy about being at Denison is I do get to wear the coaching hat, but I also get to be a professor here as well. And it offers me the opportunity to get in the classroom and work with not only student athletes, but just other students who have a similar passion and an intellectual curiosity that I do. So this has been a really good match for me over my 34 years because I do think I'm intellectually curious. I've always been very growth centered, and I think I've been a lifelong learner. I had good role models with my parents that way. And so being in a small academic setting like Denison has been a great place for me to nurture that curiosity, but also channel my competitive nature through coaching and working with young people, which is what I really enjoy doing.
Great. So much I want to ask, so I'll just throw some questions out at you. And the first one would be, so you do you minister through your coaching. Yeah. You're a professor. You have a lot of intellectual curiosity. So you've given me your resume a little bit.
Condensed version.
Condensed version, but mostly it's kind of, you're just turned 60. And so you were in your 26, 27 when you started at Denison. Okay.
Yeah.
So in your role now at Denison, what do you teach? And what have you been told by your swimmers and students they learn from you?
Well, my teaching has evolved. When I first arrived at Denison, I was teaching just a lot of activity classes, and then I moved into exercise physiology. I'd had a couple of years of exercise physiology education when I was in grad school. And they asked me to teach that. So I taught that for a number of years here. And as we hired on new faculty and new coaching faculty into the department, they saw that we had other faculty members who could meet that need, but that there was a gap among our students specifically between their undergraduate work and, let's say, the next step after graduation. And so what we chose to do was develop a junior and senior year mentoring program here, where we help our students build a bridge between what they're doing here academically through the classroom and through their internships, and then to what they want to do professionally. And part of that is going through a discernment process, helping them figure out not only what their career direction is, but more importantly, what core values they have in their lives that are helping direct those decisions, and helping their core values and their job trajectory line up more congruently. Because there seemed to be a disconnect in interviewing some of our alumni. The alumni reported to us that there was a disconnect between what they had chosen to do and maybe some of their core values. And not to say that there was buyer's regret 10, 15 years later, but you could see that there was a little dissonance, that they wished that they'd had maybe a little bit more direction in choosing a professional course that was, and that was in more in line with what their core values stated. And so one of my main role here, in addition to coaching, is to help. We have a junior and senior year cohort among our students, and we're helping those students go through that discernment to make sure that their career trajectory is more in line with the core values that they espouse. Now, we're not telling them what to believe, but we do help them understand what is driving them, from an ethical standpoint, and what a principal standpoint. And so that's been really rewarding. I've been doing that for about the last 4 or 5 years, and that's been a real nice way for me transition out of the traditional classroom into more of a mentoring role. That really enhanced my growth curve a little bit. I think I was able to lean a little bit more on my experience and my longevity. My wife and I have been raising 6 boys too. We have five children of adult age, and we still have one youngster in the house. But seeing some of the struggles and some of the things that they work through in terms of determining their vocations, I've been able to lean really hard on that experience and trying to help our students here. I think as a coach, there's always been 2 windows of time that I've been really most interested in with our swimmers. The first is the 4-year experience, the 4-year window that our student athletes have while they're here at Denison. And we want them to have a spectacular experience here academically and athletically. We want them to walk across the graduation or commencement stage 4 years later feeling like they had accomplished everything that they could, that they took full advantage of all the resources and opportunities Denison had offered them, that they had shown exponential personal growth as a student athlete, as a person. And that's a really satisfying, experience. But for me, the 40-year window is much more important. That's the one that I really have my eye on, and most important, how their 4-year experience here at Denison not only informs but helps shape and provides a foundation from which they can have a really satisfying life. Because I think to have a 4-year experience is great, but it can be very short-lived, and I think it can be very nearsighted. And so we're really playing for the long term here. And now granted, I've only been here in 33 years, starting my 34th year, so I have not hit that 40-year window yet. But I do know that my first few classes that I had here at Denison are at the 33-year mark, 34-year mark. They're now into their mid-50s, and I'm seeing what kind of satisfying lives and how productive they've been, and the kind of lives they built for themselves and other people in their communities. And the feedback that I get from our swimmers is how important their experience here at Denison was in shaping them into having those kind of lives. And that for me is the most gratifying sort of thing, is the life lessons that we are teaching our students, not only in the classroom and in the pool, but just in the day-to-day work that we do that for me is the most affirming part of the work that we do here. And so, you know, I go to bed generally with a smile on my face. I wake up with a question in my head as to how we can do it a little bit better. And, but there's always a growth curve out there for us.
Yeah. And I want to come back to the whole growth mindset idea.
Sure.
So it's like, I'll do that in a minute, but I want to talk about values first. So you've taken them, you've evolved, I imagine, a process to support these young people who are 21, 22, 23 max, looking at what their core values are. Mm-hmm. And I think if you ask a lot of senior leaders I do ask a lot of senior leaders in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, what are your core values? What are the core values of your organization, your business? Mm-hmm. They often can tell you what it says on the wall about the company, but not how they espouse them, how they live them, in every decision.
Right.
On a personal level, even fewer can tell me what their core values are. Now,
right.
So it's no wonder you experienced at Denison with the alums that they came back and said, actually, there's a dissonance between the company I chose and my core values. And so you must have had these conversations a lot. And I guess why I was asking you, like, what do you teach and what have you been told people learn? One of the things that's coming up a lot with people I'm working with and talking to at the current time around instability that we're all facing right now with the pandemic is leadership's often about how you show up, not what you say. And, you know, I've been around swimming a lot, and our mutual friend, Jeff Raker, who is involved in swimming, but was a pastor for 30 plus years.
Yes, he
was. You know, as you know, with swim officials, their demeanor on the deck, particularly a referee and starter, means everything. It means everything. The same with a coach. So, I guess it starts out with one of two sides to the question. What are your core values and when did you know them? And how obvious are they to the people you coach and teach?
I think as a young person, at some level I knew where they were because of my formative years with my parents. I think my parents did a good job of instilling core values, though they were never named.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that was atypical. Both my parents were Depression era children, came out of the American Depression and blue collar folks. And I had wonderful role models growing up, though principles or let's say core values weren't necessarily named, let's say outside of our experience, maybe going through church.
Mm-hmm.
They really weren't named, but they were lived into. So I had good role models. But as I got into the teaching and the coaching business, where communication and connecting with my students became paramount, I think, in their development, I had to find a way to articulate what those were. And I was very fortunate to have some really good people around me. Some, for a lack of better term, spiritual directors. Mm-hmm. Who helped me go through a discernment process to help me explore that, to help me peel the onion back. And there are ongoing conversations, some very important ones, I would say probably my first 8 years, 8 to 10 years here at Denison. I had some really good role models here who are outside the academia, mm-hmm. who helped me kind of explore what those values were so that I could communicate those more directly to my students and student athletes. And it took me a while. And when I first identified them, it felt very mechanical because what had been intuitive to that point all of a sudden became mechanical. Whereas like I was putting a name to something that just felt, you know, I was like, okay. But as I played with the mechanics and I lived more and more into those mechanics, and they became more and more part of me, I really began to see them evolve into something different. And not to say that I would have a different list of core values now, but I really do think it really boils down to where, if you ask me now at age 60, I would answer my core values simply with one single word, is love. And all the other core values feed into that. And I can tell you what those core values were. And, you know, their humility, their integrity, their resilience, their camaraderie, their self-discipline, there's trust and respect. And those are my core values. But when it comes to teaching and working with young people, if you're going to connect, ultimately those things boil down is that you love your student, you love your student athlete in such a way that you're doing whatever you can to help advance them into adulthood. And I believe firmly that our job as educators, as teachers, as coaches, is to provoke personal growth. And there's all sorts of tools out there, but the goal is to provoke and promote personal growth against the background that I love this person and I care about this person and I want to see them grow into who they can and want to be. And so, like, what became very mechanical at a young age is now really gets down to that one thing, is that, you know, I love my students and I love my student athletes, and I don't have a problem telling them that. And it throws them off when I share that with them a little bit, but, you know, that's just kind of who I am. And that's okay. I can live with that.
Perfect. For me, I can identify with some of what you're saying. I'm on my 55th trip around the sun, so just a few years younger. And I'm an amateur. I have three boys, not six. These streams have a habit of cutting out for 10 seconds about 10 minutes in. So.
Okay, good. I was wondering,
I don't know. I think they must be trying to get me to pay for a more premium service.
I got you.
I was just saying I can identify, but I am an amateur with a kid bit. I only have three boys.
That's not an amateur.
But the evolution, I don't think it feels like there's one level for me, and I do a lot of work with clients around values and intention and purpose. And the evolution for me is that there's something about living into as something that's stated. If you talk yourself down, you're going to be down. Sure. You know, if you talk yourself up, you know, there's a power of positive thinking, there's NLP and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, swim coaches are masters of this.
Sure.
So it's more a distillation for me. I mean, Da Vinci used to say that simplicity is the ultimate sophistication.
Einstein says that if you can't explain it, you can't teach it, you know, and it gets down to that same thing. And you have to be able to boil these things down. And I think ultimately the best way to boil it down is to live it out. And that's when words become superfluous. But, and I do think, you know, I think when I was kind of formulating this thing, and I have this document that I share with our team, which is called How to Play the Game. And it's more of a how to live your life kind of document. And it's something that we rally around as a team, as a program. It's something that we share and we use as a reference point through our difficult times, through our challenges. But we talk a lot about it over the time, but ultimately I think as coaches and as role models and as mentors, we ultimately have to live it out. Because when you get squeezed is when you finally, you know, I think that's when your character is revealed. And if you're talking, saying one thing and then doing another, this is an interesting generation of students that we're dealing with right now. And I know there's a lot of people out there that badmouth this generation of students. I think they're wonderful young people. They bring a lot of energy. They may be searching a lot, but I remember being 18 and searching a lot too. But what strikes me about this particular generation of students is that they can smell out BS faster than just about anybody. And they don't want to be lied to. They just want to be told honestly what's going on. And if you can do that in such a way that you convey your care for them, then, you know, they'll go through walls for you. But they do not want to be BS'd by in any way, shape or form. And so, if you are saying one thing and then doing another, they're going to smell it out and they're not going to follow you and they're not going to listen and they're going to go in a very different direction.
The way you've expressed the last couple of things just made me think of something in a fresh way, which often happens. I get inspired by listening to people. So there's often this thing, you know, millennials who are now 40, so we maybe need to stop talking about millennials. They're not interested in working hard and all that kind of stuff, right? Put it in a different context. My oldest son's 26, my youngest is 17, right? They've grown up in an environment where they process staggering amounts of inputs
all the time. My youngest plays video games all the time. And when I thought, well, my initial bias was not a good thing. But when I started looking at it, I realized, wow, if you look at the focus and skill that brings to a lot of them and the amount of information they can process. Sure. So in the days before emails and fax machines and all that kind of thing, which you and I can remember just about, you couldn't process that much written information during the day, right? I guess on the surface, the swim coaching game hasn't changed that much, but you know, but underneath it all, the amount of technology and recording and video and is enormous. But these kids have grown up with massive amounts of data processing ability. It's a learned behavior.
Right.
So therefore, all of the rational, analytical brain work they can do incredibly quickly. Right. Sure. So there's nothing we can teach them. When they get a job, there's nothing they can be taught that they can't look up on Google in 5 seconds.
Right.
So they've got more space for bullshit detecting. And you called it their BS detector. You've got more space to do that. And then that's perhaps, I have absolutely found that people in the younger generation are so much more focused on, you know, my big focus is purpose-led leadership for business.
Right.
And in fact, the one word you never hear business leaders say is the one word that is at the center of your being, which is love. They don't talk about it, right?
Sure.
But yet if they could take learnings from different fields, if they genuinely were on the growth curve and intellectually curious, I'm fascinated. This is why you're the second or third person I've had on from the swimming community, and Jeff will actually be on in a few weeks' time.
Uh-huh.
I'm excited about how he's taken his spiritual leadership journey as a pastor through very high-level swim officiating and a master swimmer himself. And now he's a coach, a coach of individuals and a friend and mentee of mine.
Right.
So, but actually crisscrossing this, another swimming person who's coming on, there's a huge diversity of the individuals, but the field perhaps not, is my dear friend Ian Armiger from Loughborough Swimming. And Ian hasn't coached anything other than the 4 inches between the ears for over 30 years.
Sure.
You know, he's sure. That's what it's all about at the level he operates at, that level of elite swimmer. So it's fascinating. I guess to focus on what comes next. You're entering your 34th year, started yesterday, you said, and, much has changed and much remains the same. You noted that one of your core values in your list was resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And, sort of analogy I came up with the other day in a group call with some friends in California who've got all the wildfires and all of this is that, you know, and I feel this myself, I'm feeling a bit tired of all of this. And it feels like we're about to enter the Northern Hemisphere winter. It's going to carry on. There's going to be uncertainty. And I'm talking specifically about this unique inexperience of the pandemic. And the parallel I had was I've been on a cruise ship before, and they're so huge. They're floating hotels, and they have, you know, mechanical stabilizers, etc. So when you're on them, in almost all weather conditions, you feel like you're on dry land. You don't even think about the fact. You don't wave when you walk, you know, you don't veer when you walk down the corridor. It's very steady. It's only when you get off that you realize there's been an underlying instability.
Sure.
You've not had a firm foundation under your feet.
Right.
And I guess, ask you, you know, in a minute to talk to me through how your swimmers might be feeling right now, because I imagine they've been out of the water for a long time. And I had two sons who were elite swimmers, and one thing I learned about elite, about swimmers of all levels, is that when they swim a lot, like we're talking here 9-10 times a week typically, right? You take them out of the water, mm-hmm. and they are, you know, fish out of water. They're not comfortable. It's part of their existence to be wet.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all these swimmers coming back, and for some of them it might be their first time in the water in 6 months.
Right.
And then they've got this in the sort of mid, you know, the way Ohio, I think you are in Denison, right? And so you're going to have a cold winter,
sure.
As you always do. And so a lot of indoors, a lot of uncertainty around university campuses. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about where your swimmers are, where you feel they are, and what your approach is going to be to helping them perhaps to be resilient, or what I call at this time of year, being proactively resilient, knowing it's going to be tough.
I mean, this has been the ongoing conversation since, you know, really last February when we saw the storm on the horizon last February is we saw the COVID thing starting to creep in and, the winds had shifted pretty significantly. We were on the cusp of going to NCAAs. I knew probably 10 days out from NCAAs that it wasn't going to happen. I mean, I just had all the, you know, this, you just knew it wasn't going to happen. And we didn't get official word until 5 days out. And, you know, and then I had to call the team meeting on that Thursday or Friday, Thursday before we were leaving, and just give them the news that NCAAs had been canceled. And both teams were ranked number one in the country going into this. The women's team in particular had showed immense personal growth that year. This was a gut punch times 10. This was really, really hard for them. And so we've been talking about resilience since February and how to shore things up. And it's not an easy conversation. And, you know, it's been a very destabilizing time for everyone. Not only our athletes, but our staff, for our parents, for the entire community. Is everything that they had counted on. You know, you talked about your boys' routine. I mean, all the routines had been disrupted. And all of that is destabilized. I think personally, I probably wasn't impacted maybe at the same level as maybe others. I tend to lead a bit of a monastic life anyway. And I don't use that word lightly. I mean, my wife and I have some property here in Granville, 6 acres, and we farm it. And I spend most of my time on that. It's great meditation working with my chickens and our bees and our flowers and our plants. And I'm okay being by myself, and I'm okay with that. But for a lot of people, this was really, really hard. But having that little bit of a buffer for me, I think put me in a position maybe to help some of my swimmers maybe and others that I might not have been able to had I been impacted so negatively. And so, you know, we've just been spending an awful lot of time with each other talking about it. And I think one of the key, and, you know, I think one of the reasons why we have come through it, I think we've come through it pretty well. As hard as it's been, I think our team has come through it reasonably well, is because I think we had identified our core values in advance. And I think as we went through things last March, with the news that NCAAs had become, we leaned really hard on those core values about trust and respect and humility and camaraderie. We really leaned hard on the camaraderie piece and the resilience piece to get us through it. And one thing that we espouse very hard in our program is intentional adversity. I think adversity and failure are our best teachers. And so we purposely expose our athletes to some pretty difficult challenges over the course of a season, mental and physical. And so I think our kids develop a certain confidence and a certain inner resilience to deal with these. And so as we were confronting all of this over the spring and then into the summer and now even into the fall, because these conversations are continuing, one thing that we draw on is their past. I mean, what the message I'm sending the swimmers is, while this challenge may be unique to all of us, like we've never seen anything like this before, you've encountered challenges before and you've found your way through most of those, and you will find your way through this one too. It's just going to look different. It's going to feel different. It's going to sound different. But just because it's different doesn't mean you can't do it. So we really rely on their history as opposed to us just trying to pump them up. We really try to lean hard on their past, where they've shown resilience, to help them get through this. And I think for most of them, that has worked. We have had a few of our athletes who have been a little more fragile, a little less resilient, who have struggled more than others. And in those cases, you know, we've sought out extra help, where, you know, the coaching staff and the immediate staff was not enough to help them. You know, we've encouraged them to seek outside help, and that's gone well, because I think there's a foundation of trust there that we've built up. But you know, it really rattled their cages. I think the most difficult part for our athletes was just simply that they lost access to training. I think the training and the physical activity and the routine was so important to them. You know, we just got back in the water yesterday after 3 weeks of preseason work, and we are woefully out of shape. we look really rough around the edges, but I don't think I've ever had a happier team. Yeah. We're still thrilled to be back in the water working with each other. And that's the key thing, is that they really do feed off each other very positively. And we just talked, you know, we gathered last week in our final team meeting before the season began. And really my charge to them was, you know, you're going to come in on Monday and you're going to feel really bad in the water. You're going to feel like, you know, we're going to ask you to do some things that are really hard, and you're going to feel like you suck. You know, and the key thing is to come back Tuesday and suck just a little bit less. And then when you come back on Wednesday, suck even a little less there. And then maybe by Thursday, you'll be in racing shape. I mean, all kidding aside, but the point is be patient with yourself and stay resilient and stay in there, because, you know, life's hard. Life is just really, really hard, and you got to bone up sometimes. And this is just one of those times. And if you can't bone up, and if you can't do it by yourself, then lean on your teammates to help you get there.
You're fantastic. I could listen to you talk for hours, and you bring up amazing, you bring thoughts into my head all the time. So I think my two takeaways from asking you around this term I call proactive resilience, you know, for me, I lived in the Caribbean for many years. So when I moved to London, my first winter, I didn't handle it well at all. So my second summer, I dropped a bunch of weight. I got super fit. Yep. I watched my diet. I focused on all of that stuff. So proactive resilience. And the things you're talking about, the two key things you're talking about, are one is identify your core values in advance. Mm-hmm. And if you've done that, if you haven't done that now, I would say this to all people watching or listening to this now or later.
Sure.
Be really clear on what you stand for. And you just gave the examples. You've got a list of 7 or 8 core values, which are yours, which you've been cultivating the team. And you said, we relied on camaraderie and resilience. You also mentioned trust. Of course, the wrapper over all of this is love, which is really apparent in listening to you. And the other thing was this idea of having had a practice of intentional adversity.
Sure.
You know, and for me, if I put that into practical terms of people who may not have already done that, is that piece you said about we've all had challenges.
Right.
The intentional adversity is don't assume everything's going to be easy. Assume it's going to be, prepare for worse and hope for better.
Right.
Would be my piece on that, having been through hurricanes and things like this. So anyway, I wanted to give some takeaways for our live and later listeners and viewers. Do you have one key message you'd like to share with people? What's a piece of distilled wisdom from Greg?
Oh boy. Yeah, I just think life is such we always talk about looking for miracles, and all you have to do is just stop and just look around and listen a little bit. I just think it's just, life is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. Even in the hardest moments, there's just some wonderful things going on around us all the time. We just have to stop long enough to see it. And I think that's the value that I get out of spending time on our farm, because I see it every day. I mean, I see life and I see death. I see chickens being born and I see chickens not making it. And I see, And the whole thing, there's always something going on that just reminds you of that there's something much bigger going on that is of great value. And we just have to stop and realize what we're a part of it. And that ultimately, I think, if the foundation of our swimming and diving program and my teaching is love, you know, that comes from someplace. And yeah. I think the bottom line is just, you know, the universe is looking out for us. And I think that whether you frame it as God or you frame it as universe, is I think the universe gives us what we need to heal ourselves. And as long as we're paying attention and we're listening, then that healing can take place. And life is just too good not to smile.
You put a huge smile on my face. It's been an absolute pleasure, Greg.
Well, this has been great. Tom, I've enjoyed this immensely. And when Jeff approached me about doing this, I was like, sure, why not? This will be a hoot. But, you know, just spending time with you and watching your show, this is so well done. And you bring such great people to your show. And to be part of that has really just been an honor for me.
Thank you. Great gift. And with that, we'll wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.